I thought I was second. So
you were.
Okay, I read this one here a couple of weeks ago, and I think I said when I was reading it I wasn't sure where it was, so it's lost a whole load of stuff. So if you heard it before and you didn't like it, my apologies. But it's really about me, so fuck you. It's called One More Song For You. Here I am again, stuck on you, my magnetic north, dancing barefoot around a yellow and orange summertime sun. How I wish gravity would stumble, that its undertow could disappear so you can fall on me, warm my soul or raise me from this low I sometimes believe is everlasting. Yet these days, the strange currencies you bring beat out of time and a hollow message. Now that you're gone, at my most beautiful, I am psychologically overcast, is reduced, diminished, and I fret less. I'm not afraid when I remember the last day of our acquaintance, when I took your name time after time beneath a near wild heaven carnival of southern stars. I'm not afraid when I remember our last date, you leaving me, me leaving New York with night swimming in clouds over the river and endless possibilities lingering on a perfect, bittersweet memory. Listen to me, you murmur. Stained by the passage of time, perception and emotion, memory morphs, is always imperfect. But every day is yours to win. So write the fables of your reconstruction, be alive and living now. All the lessons of life's rich pageant are clear and simple if you live for today. For a while, I believe this is the worst joke ever, that the end of the world has discovered my Neverland. But then once again, time after time, I say your name and wish to get out of this place, to say here I am again, to fun time. Suddenly, a dark globe descends and my heart accelerates as the ghost of you leaves through a fascinating fireplace. And as I watch your red head walking away, I feel an easing and know a chromosome of hope is opening a credit line on a document named I Don't Want You Anymore. And though my suspicious instinct still says I'm not over you, I know I will survive and walk unafraid into freedom's flame to love somebody else.
Thank you, Stan. Next up, Jack Shortley.
This is dedicated to all those who've drowned trying to get here. It's called Here We Come, Ready or Not. If all of us here in Cork and up the country had to pack up our old scout gear and head off to Syria or someplace, how would that go to us, for us, I wonder? And if before we even got started, we had to pay out our money to take orders from fellows we didn't know from Adam, what way would we be about that, I wonder? And if halfway over the boat started heaving and rocking and throwing us on top of one another and the crew were refusing to send out an SOS, what would we feel about that, I wonder? And then if the boat started keeling over and dipping on one side and sending us all sliding and we could actually see people disappearing into the water, what would we be about that, I wonder? And if by some miracle of God some of us got rescued and landed safe, only to be told we had to go back, or wait for months to be sent someplace else, what way would we feel about that, I wonder? And if one of the days the whole lot of us got on the notion to ring up into Cork FM or the like and say, 'tis a disgrace, how would that go for us, I wonder?
Thank you, Jack. Next up, Ben Burns.
I want to tell you something, but the more I think about it, the less I know what it is that I want to tell you. And maybe I don't want to tell you anything. I want to tell you nothing, but I can't tell you that. I have for you instead a representation of nothing.
Thanks, Ben. Next up, Luke O'Rourke.
This is a funny little poem, I think. Well, the content isn't actually that funny, or at all. It was actually just the... I was kind of... Like, I was with a girl when I wrote this, and it's called You. And, yeah, it was funny because it kind of made me feel guilty a little. I sent it on to her, and it made me feel a little bit guilty of misleading information because it wasn't about her. It was actually... I was studying Japanese philosophy at the time as well. And it was more inspired by that. But anyway, yeah, so see what you think. You are the night sky, that is, bringer of wonder with infinite points of spectacularity to nostalgia and dream manifestations upon. A double-ended projector, bringing to a whirlwind of unquestionable force, lifting me away to the abyss and making me of it, while cementing me rooted to here.
Thanks, Luke. Next up, Mary O'Connor.
Okay, so this is the continuation of the Samson saga that I started last week. And you might wonder why I would be going back to a Bible story in this day and age. But Samson is a strange character, and he believed himself to be very strong, but he had a huge ego. And there are two guys at the moment who have huge egos facing one another. And I thought the consequence of Samson and the consequences of what might happen if these two lock horns are unimaginable. So it's like a cautionary tale, as I say. So anyway, just to fill in for the people who might not have been here at the beginning, Samson leaves his Israelite group and heads off to the Philistines and wants to marry a girl from the Philistine camp against his parents' wishes. And he just does that. And in the course of the wedding feast, he decides that he's going to trick the Philistines by offering them the possibility of winning 30 suits of clothes if they unravel a riddle that only he will be able to solve. So they're very upset. They threaten his wife. They say, you have to find out a secret. If you don't, we'll burn your house down. And of course, she does in fact worm it out of him, which is the beginning of the secrets which are on his undoing. So now we can go back to my... I've given a kind of a take on it, which is rather cynical, shall we say. So to take it up, Samson left the feast, hell-bent on revenge. He quickly slaughtered 30 Philistines. Without a thought, he stripped them of their clothes and gave them to the man who won the bet. Then, like a sulky teenager, he left his bride and mooched back to his father's house. When he finally cooled down, he returned to claim the wife he had abandoned. He nearly hit the roof when her father told him he gave her to another man, but offered him her sister in exchange. Now, Samson could not stomach second best. He went off to hunt a load of foxes, then set alight their tails, which he then tied and sent them to destroy Philistine crops. Samson's father-in-law was blamed for this. He and his daughter sheltered in his house, but neighbours set the dwelling place on fire. The bride was fried. She never had a chance. Estranged from everyone, Samson slunk off to live alone near the rock of Etam. Delighted to observe his growing strength, when his tribesmen came to tell him off for causing so much havoc in the land, he willingly allowed himself be bound and handed over to his enemies. The Philistines could not believe their luck. He was to be their prisoner at last. But Samson burst the ropes that held him down. Then, in another blood binge, he lashed out, killing at least 1,000 of their men, with nothing but the jawbone of an ass. Victorious, he went down to Gaza and carried off its gates. Hard to believe, he chose to wed a Philistine again. The guy just never learned from his mistakes. It could be chutzpah or pig-headedness. We all know what happened with Delilah. Even Tom Jones has belted out her name. How Samson told the secret of his strength, which she coaxed from him while they were in bed. How she cut his hair while he was sleeping, depriving him of his prodigious strength. They gouged his eyes out, let him on display, propped between the pillars of the temple, dedicated to their idol Dagon. Then, in one last act of pure defiance, he brought the building down on all of them. Some Jews might see him as a role model. Still, he lacked the vision of a leader, more a vigilante than a hero. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mary. And next up, we have Cedric Bicon.
Waiting in line. A ticket, and another one. So I wait in line, in hope, to find salvation and measure. I had not given up until I take another ticket to meet the Savior, a Pope. I step out, this line isn't mine. I check my pocket, so many tickets, and a bad form. Full of life choices, I see one, I pick it, I take it. The warning I stand, I'm on a slippery slope. At the end of which there are witches and freak, and a life with no honor, where I hang low, clinging to those few of a stretched relationship, forming a thin rope. It sounds strict, I take it. But the clock of my life ticks, I can't afford to mope. In my ventures around, I see the devil's brick, walls, cast stones and bricks, hands out to pull me back in line, in a life without flavor, waiting for a savior. Nope.
Thank you, Cedric. Rosalind Blue.
Thanks very much. I found a really, really dark piece here that I wrote at the start of the year, so I'll just read that. It's called Giving Up. Giving up is giving up hope, is seeing no perspective, is accepting the status quo, mind and spirit at breaking point. Giving up is resigning to the powers that be, withdrawing from the force of life, allowing to be overwhelmed, allowing to be submerged. Giving up is swallowing the brainwash. We're sitting on the fence, or being whipped into the rafting river with no strength to resist. Giving up is letting go the struggle, shutting out the spark, withdrawing into darkness, no more reaching out. Giving up is losing hope, slipping off the last straw, being ripped away by the river into the whirling waves, raging, gurgling, surging.
Thank you. So next up, Patrick Norton.
Thanks. Just wanted to say I enjoyed all the poems tonight. The lady's poem about Samson was wonderful. I'm actually reading that story to my child at the moment, so it brought it to life. Lovely story about darkness, and Phil's poetry was lovely, especially the one about getting to a stage in his life where my parents are probably at, Phil. I got it. It was very nice, and a lovely drawing actually that you received, which I kind of spotted. I don't know who did that, but it showed great character. Yeah. So I'm not a, I've only ever done one poem. It's a poem for my wife. I was cycling home from where I work in Cork along the Kingsley, and I was infatuated with my new smartphone, my iPhone, so I could record it on the walk. It was great. I loved my iPhone so much until it died. 13 months, a month outside of warranty, and then I got to understand the corporate world a little better, but anyway. So this is a poem I wrote on the Kingsley walk. It's from my wife, so I've passed it by her in case anyone thinks it's a little... Anyway, I'll let you judge yourselves. And it's in memory of Leonard Cohen as well, who Phil referenced early, a lovely singer and a lovely poet. I don't have it written down, my phone died, but I think I can remember it, so bear with me. Okay. Hard, throbbing, violent and erect, I go seeking. Warm, soft, fragrant and wet, you lie waiting. They say never the twain shall meet, yet we have met. We have embraced, we have kissed, we have hugged, we have become one, we have co-joined. Like a thundering meteorite pummels into a strange and distant planet, we have changed everything, and everything about us has changed. Yet I remain hard, violent, throbbing, erect, impatient, and you, my love, are warm, soft, fragrant, wet, and patient.
Thank you. Thanks, Patrick. Next up, we have Kieran Raftery.
Get us sing a song if that's cool.
Sure. No.
No crack. So this is, I was going to read it, but I wrote this a while back, and I put chords to it today, so I said I'd give it a go. It's about a dream of having true love and world peace at the same time. So not much to ask for, but we'll see. It's called Can't Help But Dream. Thank you.
Take a walk with me by the avenue and make me dream and color me through. Take a walk with me on the city streets. Stay close by me, kiss me sweet. Won't you gaze with me at the stars? we can marvel at all that is ours. And watch our face light up like a beam, when we can see it's all been sewn at the seams. But I can't help but dream. And I can't help but dream. Sure as the crooked day turns to night, you can carry all you thought left behind. Search and each time you'll find what it is that's had you in this bind. Tell me how perfect and serene, if we were all the one member of this team. If we were all members of the one team, I can't wait for that day to come to be. But I can't help it but dream. Oh, I can't help but dream.
Thank you. Cheers. Thanks, Kieran. Thanks a lot. Next up, Philip Spillan.
I don't know, going after a song like that, that rocked, man. Well done. This is a kind of like experiment. It's brand new, so I don't know how it's going to work. I don't know how long it can be as well, cause as you might see with the poem itself. So, the weather man. You see a trace of grey lace suspended against a storm sky. Pull it, its profile will dissolve before your eyes. Know that you were told since when you were young was lies. Logic tries to dry the tears up from your eyes. And what lies on the other side is false. And the anchorman was right all along. That in the rain skies within each teardrop is truth. And when it spills, its rhythm will ripple and end. Let's pretend like the weatherman that the skies aren't black with truths. But somehow, sometimes, the grey looks like blue. To ignore the anchorman, whose honest flirts seem true, you resort to pretend it's blue and good, like the weatherman, till you listen to the music. And then you see a trace of grey lace suspended against a storm sky. Pull it, its profile will dissolve before your eyes. Know that you were told since when you were young was lies. Logic tries to tear the tears up from your eyes. And what lies on the other side is false. And the anchorman was right all along. That in the rain skies with each teardrop is truth. And when it spills, its rhythm will ripple and end. Let's pretend like the redder man that the skies aren't black with truths, but somehow, sometimes, the grey looks like blue. To ignore the anchor man whose honest flirts seem true, you assault to pretend it's all blue and good, like the redder man, till you listen to the music. And then you see a trace of grey lace suspended against a storm sky. Pull its profile, and it dissolves before your eyes. I think you get what I'm trying to do. So thank you.
Thanks, Philip. Next up on the open mic, Charles Clark.
Woo! the small pieces. Maybe. Refusing to open for some reason. Right. Surely this will open. It will. It will. I've been writing a few short things, and I'm not sure whether any of them are any good, to be quite frank. Okay, I'll just give you this to start with. August, I leant back on my cushions while the TV news reports betrayals that might happen. August, after all, has nothing to say. I also want to read a poem by Geoffrey Hill, once upon a time, only quite recently dead, but at one time considered to be, by some people at least, the best poet in England. For some reason his stuff keeps on coming up, the same pieces keeps on coming up, but he did in fact write an enormous amount of stuff. I'm going to read this. In this version he has omitted certain commas which are to be found in the original, and I discovered this by looking it up in the Bodleian Library. In memory of Jane Fraser, when snow like sheep lay in the fold, and winds went begging at each door, and the far hills were blue with cold, and a cold shroud lay on the moor, she kept the siege. And every day we watched her brooding over death like a strong bird above its prey, the room filled with the kettle's breath. Damp curtains glued across the pane, against the pane, sealed times away. Her body froze as if to freeze us all and chained creation to a stunned repose. She died before the world could stir. In March, the ice unloosed the brook, and water ruffled the sun's hair. Dead cones upon the alders, alder shook. Dead cones upon the alder shook.
Thank you, Charles. Patricia Walsh is next.
Before I start, do anybody know what a Jaeger bomb is? Yes, yeah. Because I remember I used to go to loafers and kids used to drink Jaeger bombs by the bucket load. So this has come down to... It's been known to happen, yeah. But it's a kind of poem about lost innocence. This Jaeger bomb. We have coals of flower and dye, the liberated young released into the wild, not standing straight, exit permitting, intelligent shots proving nothing forsaken. Rewarded for the effort to make life easier, through a laptop's eyes, no cause to savour. A delicate history doesn't help matters. Remember for generosity, however divorced. The locality's biggest losers fondle a pint, passing on excitement at a pin's drop, carving out beer mats, a tale not telling, not nicely rounding on themselves and go home. Futile dialogue pulverised a deeper need, laughing in unison, a hapless action, harder and smarter in every big way, flashing in final lights in the pub accentuates. Surrendering your best work or otherwise, parsing the dust in ultimate corners, local revolution turned another lady, quietly dissuading by any further ado. Once galore is finished, pint pennies have dropped, hung over for peace, the depression sated, out of order, nicely framing misdemeanours, to talk in doorways, spiked on exit. Thank you.
Thanks, Trish. Next up we have Gabriela Caldera.
I will do as some of you may know. First I'll read, I have some haiku. I'll read first in my native language and then I'll read the translation, despite the fact that the amount of syllables won't be correct anymore. But O velho bordo cantava o céu antigo numa viola. Gatos bocejam sob o sol do meio-dia, ao fundo a lua. O cisne repousa boiando num rio de prata, no peito uma lança. Nas lajes de pedra escrevi o meu nome oculto, ali o sepulcro. No céu anoitece, chovem as penas de prata dos anjos caídos. Penélope chora, ali, dobrada ao tiar, seus sonhos tecia. Para que a pressa? Nada ultrapassa o andar de um velho relógio. O profeta parte numa carroça de fogo. Silêncio, a noite. The old maple was singing the ancient sky in a guitar. Cats yawn under the sun at noon, afar the moon. The swan rests, floating in a silvery river, in its chest a spear. In the flat stones I wrote my hidden name, there the grave. In the sky it dawns, silver feathers are raining from the fallen angels. Penelope cries, there, bent by the loom, her dreams she weaves. Why the hurry? Nothing exceeds the pace of an old clock. The prophet departs in a chariot of fire. Silence, the moon.
Obrigado, Gabriela. Max Creedon.
I like to do frivolous pieces, but this isn't. I wouldn't be at Ovale, really, unless this thing happened. And it, as the 14th child, it's the 14th of August, and I'm the 14th reader, so it's my lucky number, double seven. Yeah. I'm number 14. There's so many like me out there. But anyway, oh, Jesus, I have no glasses. Sorry, sir. Anyway, so it's something... I serve all this. Oh, you're my baby. Thank you, Stan. So please just permit me, because I couldn't write for love nor money 4 years ago, but this is what came out on the night, and it was exactly this time 4 years ago. We were very lucky, and a long journey of recovery began for someone. So I'll sing a tiny bit of it. A sleeping gold-haired amber boy, stranded in dreams of stolen joy, as you hover here between heaven and earth, in a chestnut glow, the hue of your birth. The spirits watched over when you weren't able, suspended life on a cold white table. Ancients wondered, would you cross over? Heart stopped and held my head in your shoulder. I'd always thought you'd plough your own furrow, but this time the earth used your face to burrow. Your cheek crossed through with gravel and shingle, neck and shoulder dripping to your singlet. Waiting hands guide you through the abyss. Bathe and cleanse when I leave you one kiss. Your countenance smooth with morphine vapors. Breathing airways restored the life that tapered. And that gurney transposed from a plinth to a boat. And you sail to a sea of pain and float back to my arms in a tide of goodwill. A union of love at new hot tears spill. And all those hearts and smiles and pleas and all those people on their knees sail you back to safe haven on this earth. I suffered in your coming, but not at rebirth. As a sleeping golden amber boy rose up with a smile and said, that's a life, boy. There you go.
Thank you, Mags. And the last but not least, on the open mic, we have Choke Collective, represented by myself and Kieran McCurtain.
Thank you. You are not lazy, but battling in resistance to the significant force that exists that wants you to do nothing but consume. For if you do nothing, nothing will change. And through cycles of changing nothings, the peoples of the West will continue to have their lives paid for by the lives of peoples of lands to the south and east of them. Out of sight, out of mind, and stay out. Do not enter my mind on a raft, nor dinghy, nor banana boat, for my mind is too tired to carry the weight of your struggle. It has been worked all day, carrying meaningless manufactured loads down well-paved famine roads. Distractions from the fleeting moment of genius that I had in the shower this morning, that if acted on might have brought about change, or at least a change of habit, as you change habitat on a coffin ship. A full vessel full of full vessels longing to enter a place where they can be emptied of meaning, where they are weighed down no more, where life is so light, life is so light, life is so full of light. Ignored until saturated, saturated until repulsed, repulsed until eyes close in fear of blindness. Dark and proud, proud to have avoided blindness by closing your eyes. You are not lazy and you are not blind, but you are doing nothing and you have closed your eyes and you have chosen to do so.
Ladies and gentlemen, that's it for tonight. Please put your hands together once again for Phil and his wonderful performance.